Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
My name is Sydney Lee, and I started the cello when I was about 6 years old. And it was because my mom was actually a cellist, so she was my first teacher. But actually, a little bit of a story. The reason why I started cello was because she was playing at Carnegie Hall when I was five. And I remember going to her concert with my dad. And as soon as I saw her perform on stage, I remember telling my dad, "That's what I want to do." So that's how I kind of got things started.
Now, I know that your mom's a musician, your brother Noah is a brilliant musician as well. Is your dad a musician too?
No, he's the only non-musician, but he loves classical music, so we count him in.
That's going to be great because he's the one audience member in the home, always an audience member. So one of the kids emailed me and they wanted to know, how do you prepare for a major competition or performance? Like, what's the process of that?
Oh, that's a great question. Okay. Well, actually, competition is a little bit, it's similar, but a little bit different from a performance. So for a concert, normally, you know, there's a set program, and it depends on also how far in advance I know about the performance. But generally, I will just kind of set a schedule. I'll actually write it down because I need to see things visually. So I write down, like, you know, this week I need to get this repertoire done, this week I need to get this piece done. And then from there, I kind of narrow it down to every day, what do I need to do? So it's kind of from big picture to smaller picture. It's similar to competitions, except that you're having a lot more repertoire to juggle. So it's tricky because a lot of competitions require so much repertoire, you just can't practice everything every day. But it's just important to make sure you're cycling through, so it's not like you're going too long without practicing one piece. But I hope that answers your question. It's just a lot of pre-planning, but also it's kind of about planning and then adjusting while you go through it. So if you make this plan and you realize, oh, this actually needed more work than I thought, then, you know, it's about readjusting how much time you put in what spot. Maybe some spots felt easier than you were expecting and some spots were a little bit trickier.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Like, it seems so, like, I've seen a lot of your stuff. You make it look so easy, and like to put it in like your shoes, where it's like watching a professional athlete, like a Michael Jordan or something like that. You're like, gosh, don't they get nervous or anything like that? We have, which brings me to the next question. This is a question from Oriol. Oriol in Spain. You had a really good question. Go ahead and ask.
Hello. Are you going to compete again?
That's a great question. I probably will. I don't know how many more, to be honest, but probably a few more, but we'll see. I'm not 100% decided yet.
And like competitions, like those can be like really like high stress, right? Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, you know, they're very different from performances in the sense that, at least for me personally, I feel like it takes a lot more effort to really be free under competition setting because it's so much pressure. But at the same time, it's, you know, it really tests your strength, your mental strength, in the sense that you really have to just try to put the pressures aside and just play your absolute best and just trust all the work that you put into it. But yeah, it's not easy. You know, I feel like there's some element of luck involved in the sense that, you know, you have to make sure you're healthy. You can't get sick. You know, you have to make sure the circumstances all work out. The pianist you're playing with is great. you know, that you're in the best condition and you know that you're the best prepared that you've ever been. So it's, you know, there are a lot of components to feeling great for a competition, but at the same time, I think the benefits that come out of preparing for it are just so invaluable. And it really actually forces you to learn so much repertoire at once and handle so much repertoire at once that when you do performances after, it feels a lot easier in that sense that you don't actually have that much repertoire.
Gosh, that's well said. Well said. We have a question from France, and this is Julie. Go ahead and ask your question, friend.
Yes, I wanted to know because I play also music at a high level, and I wanted to know what diplomas you have and you need there, and if you went to the conservatory.
Sorry, I missed your first part of the question.
I believe she was asking what diplomas, like what degrees did you have? And then did you go to any type of conservatory?
Oh, okay. Actually, all throughout from when I was 8 until the start of college, I went to Juilliard's pre-college division. And then afterwards, for my undergraduate degree, I went to Curtis Institute of Music. And afterwards, I went to Northwestern University to do my master's degree. And I'm actually still here right now doing my doctorate degree. So I'm finishing my coursework this coming June, and then yeah, hopefully the rest of it won't take so long.
You've had such an amazing career, and it's so cool to like keep up and follow and watch. And so guys, definitely follow her on socials. But I have a question, but this is all the way from Kuwait. And Tiffany, go ahead and ask your question. It was a really good question.
Okay, does your music is on Spotify? Because I want to get inspired and I love the sound.
You know, actually, I right now currently know. All my recordings are on my YouTube channel, so go subscribe if you haven't. But honestly, it actually that's one project that's kind of in the planning for me right now, which is to make an album. And at that point, then yes, it would be on Spotify and Apple Music and everything. But we're still in the very beginning stages of planning it, so.
Yeah, we will share her links for her YouTube after this, so you guys can all check that out. This question is coming from Spain. This is a student named Christine. And Christine, go ahead and ask. You had a good question.
Hello. I would like to ask you if you consider that older people can learn to play an instrument. But in case your answer is yes, what would you recommend that people to achieve that goal?
Of course, at any age you can learn an instrument. For me at least, when I started with the Suzuki books. So I think that's a really great way just to build a general foundation. And then, you know, some people go through a lot of the books, some people go through not so many books. I think I went through maybe three. So, you know, I think after a couple you'll get a feel of it, and then from there, you can progress to, you know, different pieces and stuff like that. But definitely, you can start learning at any age, for sure.
Now you've performed all over the world. You've performed in so many amazing venues, and you performed incredible pieces of music. What is one of the most memorable, if you had to choose one, of your career?
Oh, you gave me a really tough question. I will say, okay, one of the first ones that come to mind are it's the Bachshakone. And it comes from his violin Partita number 2, which I actually arranged myself. And it was really memorable, just the process of arranging it and figuring out how to play it on the cello essentially, because a lot of things that are easier on the violin are a lot harder for the cello. So I think just the process of arranging that and then playing it was also just one of the hardest pieces I've played. But it was also musically one of the most rewarding pieces, because I mean, you can't go wrong with Bach. His writing is so simple, but just so magical in many different ways. And so I think for me, that was one of the most meaningful pieces I've played recently. Actually, also because it's on my YouTube channel, actually, but I recorded it in the chapel very intentionally. And just to play Bach in that kind of space was just a completely different kind of sound that was really enjoyable and so rewarding in many different ways.
And in the video, we'll share that now. So that'll be my post-production. We're going to kick it back to Kuwait. Tiffany, go ahead and ask your question. I thought that was a really good question.
I want to know if in composition you play alone or with other people, like in duo?
That's a great question. In competition, so it depends on what the repertoire requirements are, but normally it's actually a mixture of solo, playing pieces with piano, and playing with orchestra in the final round. So it's a mixture. And I know some violin competitions ask for chamber music as well, but there hasn't been a cello competition, at least, that has asked for chamber music. But yeah, it really just shows many different, it shows how you adjust and adapt to many different kinds of settings, which is so important as a musician.
Great, great advice. And we have Julie. Go ahead, Julie. You can ask your question, friend.
Yes, I wanted to know in concerts, how do you choose the order of the pieces you play?
Oh, okay. Great question. How do I choose my order? Normally, I'll put, it's almost like a menu. So if you think of it like appetizer, entree, dessert, when I can, I like to think of it this way. So actually, one of my most recent recitals that I did, I played a piece by Janáček, which is like a short 10-minute work with piano. So I considered that like the appetizer. And then I did Schubert's Arpeggione Sonata, which is more of like the entree. And well, this last piece I ended with could be an entree or dessert, but just because I had to keep the recital program short, I put the Stravinsky Sweet Italian last because it has a very like energetic, fiery ending, which is great for, you know, a way to end the concert. But also normally if I have a little bit more time for a recital, I'll incorporate another short piece or like a virtuosic piece as the dessert just to end the program. So it's almost, you want to sandwich it so that it really feels complete. And you know, I know a lot of people who base their programs on a specific theme. I personally haven't done that yet, but that's something that I would love to do. But yeah, I think generally I just try to think of it like a menu or that type of thing.
That is brilliant. And one of our students in Italy, they wanted to know, have you ever heard of the artist Two Cellos? I'm not sure if you've heard
of Two
that.
Cellos, of course. Of course. I love Luka Sulik's playing, actually, even like just his classical playing, not his more pop style playing. He's such a great cellist. So yeah, they're great. I mean, the two of them are great. It's sad that they're, you know, no longer playing together, but they're both great cellists.
That's wonderful. So this from me, I thought this was interesting that, so you had Julian Lloyd Webber, who's the former principal of the Birmingham Conservatory. He gave you such a rave review. What, can you explain like what that was like? Cause obviously the guy is a legend in what he does. Like, how did that like feel and how did that come about?
You know, so this happened because in Dubai, I competed in the Classic Strings International Competition. And he was one of the jury members. And after the competition was finished, all the finalists, we talked with the jury. And he actually came up to me and, you know, he was very, very kind, very sweet man. But we just really hit it off, and it was such a great conversation. And he was telling me just, you know, how well he thought I played. And it was, you know, it was, I was starstruck completely because I heard of Julian Lloyd Webber when I was like a kid. And, you know, I never imagined that day coming. It just felt so surreal. And he was really kind enough to, you know, write those words for me. And, you know, he's an amazing musician and amazing person. And I just feel so privileged to have had the opportunity to meet him.
That's amazing. So we're going to let Tiffany, she had another follow-up question, go ahead and ask from Quake.
And you, when you play your music, do you get inspired? Like you imagine things, for example, you imagine you in your hometown.
So are you asking like when I play, do I imagine different things?
Yeah, yeah, that's yes. What she's asking.
I think so. Definitely you need, when you play, you have to have sources of inspiration. So whether that be personal experiences or just specific things you've observed in your life or things that you can empathize with, I think it's so crucial. I really think that's kind of, you can't make music without it. you really, because there is that emotional component to making music. And so for me personally, I kind of draw inspiration from those different aspects. I also draw inspiration from watching other artists perform and seeing how they interpret it. And because a lot of times they'll, you know, I'll see a recording or I'll see someone live and I'll be like, oh my gosh, like I didn't see that. Like that's such a brilliant, you know, way to think about that passage. So it's just, you know, immersing yourself in other artists' performances as well. It can be really a great tool to just learn and absorb.
Absolutely. One of the kids, they want to know, do you play, have you ever played or tried any other instruments?
Piano miserably. I had to learn a little bit of piano for my undergraduate degree. And I think at a certain point, my teacher gave up on me. I mean, I loved the piano, but it was just too hard for me. I think cello was enough.
Well, you certainly make it look so easy too. I love, one of my favorites, and maybe I'll try and pull this recording, but it's when during COVID, you and your brother performed for our students. And I thought it was so cool. It was just the coolest. You guys made it look so easy. But this is our final student question. This comes from Spain. Manuela, go ahead and ask.
Hi. So how often do you play in competitions? And when you're not competing, what's your everyday life like as a cellist?
Great question. So the last, I did two competitions in 2022. So it's been about 2 years. I guess depending on whether I do one this year or not, yeah, it's just every few years, I guess, you know, I've been entering stuff. But when I'm not competing, I, of course, perform. And I also have a cello quartet that I founded about 3 years ago. And so we are performing quite a bit as well. I've also been, you know, doing my doctorate degree. So there have been some classes with that. So yeah, it's just a lot of my own projects that I like to form, and I like to just tackle a little bit each day.
Yeah, you certainly do a lot too, and you're so young. That's awesome. So our my final question, I asked this of all the guests, what kind of advice would you give for the kids as they go off into the world and figure out what they want to do, whether it's with music or something completely different? What kind of general advice would you have?
That's such a great question. You know, it's actually something that I've been thinking about a lot myself. And I think the biggest thing that I would advise is to just keep exploring. I think no matter what field you're in, and, you know, even if you're really passionate about one thing, I think it's always so good to absorb different things in life and experience different things in life. So, you know, say yes to as many opportunities as you can, even if they feel small, they're never small. you learn something from each one. And because I think whatever you go into, it's so important to grow as a person as well, not just in your craft. They really go hand in hand. The more that you develop as a person, the more you will also grow as an artist or whatever you may choose to do. So I would really advise to just explore, especially at, you know, your age, explore as much as you can. There's so much that life has to offer. And I would say also dream big. I know it sounds very cliche, but a lot of times I feel like in our generation especially, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of impatience. So I would say really don't think small scale, think big scale. And you know, because the bigger you dream, the closer you are to reaching that. So yeah, those are the things that I would advise.
Amazing advice. Faith over fear. Faith over fear. So before I let you go, before I end the meeting for everybody on here, I'm going to allow everyone to unmute. And can we all say thank you to Jella Sydney Lee for coming and talking to us today?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.